c'est ça. All right, so we talked about this notion that it's all about love. It was originally said not by John Lennon, but by Hillel. Hillel said to the person, the aspiring Jew, he said to him, this is the mitzvah, he says, Zehu kol ha-Torah, v'iduch pirushu. And we've been struggling ever since Hillel said those words to try to understand it. Last week I shared with you the words of Rashi, the question that the Maharal asks on that. And we introduced this new pathway that's blazed by the Alter Rebbe here in Tanya in explaining how it's possible to say that ultimately it's all about love. In a word, what we learned till now is that the Yeshayit V'Sheir is called a Torah, that this foundation, the root of the entire Torah, is Lahagbiya Olale Sanefesh Alaguf, is to create supremacy of spirit over body. And if we can begin to focus on the Shama instead of on body, instead of on Guf, then everything changes. And Alter Rebbe identified the biggest problem in fulfilling the mitzvah of Yahavta L'Reach Kameicha is the body gets in the way. So if we can only get past the body, everything will be fine. And therefore that is the whole Torah, because once you fulfill this mitzvah right, you're essentially fulfilling the mission of Torah and mitzvahs. And today we're going to take it to the next level. Not only are we going to speak about the importance of Lahagbiya V'Lahales HaNefesh HaLaguf, not only will we speak about the importance of elevating the soul beyond the bodily matters, so that life should become more than the sum of its parts. Life is not just about the next meal. It's not just about the next 5 minutes of pleasure, or fame, or fortune. In fact, that's really not even secondary. It's actually irrelevant. Here today, gone tomorrow, it has nothing real to offer. And a person realizes that life is about spiritual pursuit, the favor you do, the prayer you engage in, the Torah you study. These are things that are yours forever. So in addition to this, the Alter Rebbe now takes it to the next level. He says not only are we elevating the soul over the bodily, but furthermore, he says the direction of that elevation is mila mila, higher and yet higher, ad ikra v'shorsho d'chol almin, until we get to the root, to the source of all of existence. So we have to elevate the neshama not only over the bodily limitations, not only over what makes us tick, whether it's a few bucks, some fame, but rather what makes us tick is another mitzvah. Not only this, but the soul itself can be elevated to its original source. So what does this mean? The yesod and the shoresh, the foundation and the root of all Torah and mitzvahs, is not simply to elevate the soul over the body and create supremacy of the spirit. But rather, because then once you get past the bodily reality, then you're done. But that's not what Yiddishkeit asks you. It doesn't say just get past the body. It says keep aiming for the stars. It says you need to be able to elevate yourself to ikra v'sharsha, to the source of everything, of all of creation itself. So what does that mean? What does it mean to elevate the neshama to the source of creation? When the neshama goes on this big journey, it's actually a 9-month journey, from the moment of gestation, when supposedly scientists have identified there's a flash of light, and as a body begins to develop inside the womb of a woman, a neshama begins its journey, its descent through myriads of worlds, going lower and lower until it's ready to actually enter into the corporeal reality and life as we know it, meaning body and soul together, can begin. So when the neshama begins its journey, so what happens is the neshama always remains a neshama. It always remains a godly entity. And what does happen, however, is that the body throws a lot of shade on the neshama, and it gets in his way, and it inhibits the neshama from functioning like a neshama. Where does it all stem from? What's the root of all the problems? If you had to identify the root of all the problems in one word, what would it be?
Ego.
Ego is right. Yeah. Because as long as it knows that it is subservient to Hashem, we have no issue. The problem is when I feel independent of God. If I wouldn't feel independent of God, sin would not be a possibility. If I wouldn't feel separated from God, so behaving outside of what Hashem asks or wants from us would never be on the horizon. The only way it can be on the horizon is because, in fact, I feel independent of God. Now, this independence, or this ego thing, is also critically important to be able to have what we call mitzvahs, Because if there isn't somebody who feels independent, then there's nobody to make a choice. If there's nobody to make a choice, there's no what we call bechira chafshis. If no bechira, there's no life, there's no holiness. Holiness only comes because of the fact that there is a choice to choose evil or good. That's where righteousness comes from. So choice is the most essential ingredient in the manufacturing of righteousness. Having said this, we understand that the neshama, even though it's still godly, but it begins to feel itself as a unique and separate entity. So just like when you're a unique and separate entity, you're looking out for number one, the neshama now cares about the neshama. It's looking for its merits. It's looking for its development. It's looking for it to love and feel a sense of awe and reverence for Hashem. So what's the purpose of all the mitzvahs? What we would call the Yesed V'Shedesh, is not only to create dominance of mind over matter and spirit over materiality. In other words, to be able to go beyond the substance of life and to understand the spiritual style of life, but that furthermore, a person should be able to elevate his neshama to the point that the neshama should feel a total bittul, a total sense of subservience, a total sense of being subsumed within the divine reality. And that is going beyond not only the body, but it's going beyond the neshama as well. Because the neshama also feels independent. That's the nature of neshama. Neshama necessarily feels independent. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a neshama. So therefore, we usually have a metaphor where we talk about the bigger image of the Jewish people, and we talk about the concept of Avas Yisrael. We talk about a body, one great big body. And we say that each and every single member of Am Yisrael is part of that cellular structure. Every cell is an independent reality. In fact, if you break the cells down into molecules, into protons and neutrons, every proton and neutron is an independent reality. Each one is separate unto itself. And yet, together they comprise and form the different parts of the body. And so we say some people occupy cellular material of the proverbial or metaphoric eye, some people are the brain, some are the heart, some are the intestines, etc., etc. We're all part of this thing. What happens if a person experiences a wound or an infection in one part of the body? What will happen automatically? Automatically, the rest of the body will suffer. That's the way it is. It's because there's the bloodstream that throws throughout the body. If there's an infection in one area of the body, it'll very quickly be carried to all the other areas of the body. And there are, you know, awful stories of people who got an infection in the toe, and then it caused, God forbid, a heart event. So things like this could happen. Why? Because we're all in this together. And it doesn't require a great deal of explanation to understand that a body is comprised of limbs that are all interlocking. And the health of one necessarily will impact and transform the health of another, for good, or chas v'shalom the other way. So when you look at it that way, all of us have a role to play. There's no Jew who's expendable. You say, oh, you know what? That's a stupid finger. The heck with him. I say, what are you talking about? If your finger is cut and bleeding, the rest of the body's going to suffer too. So therefore, we have a need for us to care about the entire picture, the whole big grand gestalt. Okay, so assuming that that in fact is the case, that it doesn't mean, though, that there isn't more important parts of the body and less important parts of the body. There's still a brain, there's still a heart, there's still vital organs. And vital organs and most important parts of the body have to be given a greater sense of care, protection, than other parts. And invariably, if you want to stay alive, there are certain parts of the body that will be expendable and certain parts of the body will not be expendable. If you lose your brains and your heart, you're not staying alive. If you lose toes, maybe incomplete, you can still live. And therefore, it's an imperfect metaphor because it still emphasizes the distinctions and the differences between us. We all share a common lot. We all, if you will, make a contribution. We all have a role to play, but we're all separate. We're different. And the truth is, you don't even need to go to the metaphor of a body. Every society has many different actors, all of whom play a role. Some of you may remember in Toronto, maybe it was 12 years ago, 15 years ago, there was a sanitation strike, and it crippled the city. You say, what do you do? Sanitation. Ha, sanitation. What do you do? I'm a heart surgeon. Wow, a heart surgeon. So the heart surgeon and the sanitation engineer, even now he has a fancy name, he's still not getting the same salary. He's still not getting the same respect. But you know what? When there was no sanitation in the city, it was a big problem. So everybody has a role to play. Whereas they say, every dog has his day. So therefore, every yid may be important, and the Mishnah says, "Al tihi vazuch al adam," never dismiss anybody. Know that everybody can play a role, and everybody can be important, and everybody is important, and everybody has to be respected. Very nice, but nonetheless, there's still the sanitation engineer, and then there's the leader. There's the chayte veitzecha v'shoyv meimecha, the people who are involved in energy and sanitation, and the people who are involved who are rasheichem shivteichem, the leaders, the heads, and they're not one and the same. However, if we go le'ikra v'sharsha, if we go back to the origin of it all, where does it take us? At the origin, everything comes from the same place. So let's use the metaphor, go back to the metaphor of the body. The body with all of its distinctions, with the heart and mind, with the liver, with lungs, they're all separate. They all have a separate cellular structure. You can regrow liver from liver cells. You cannot regrow liver from heart cells. They're very, very different. The heart has a very, very smooth muscle that doesn't absorb blood. The liver is entirely comprised of blood. It's totally different. However, it's not impossible for anybody to know or think about the fact that at one point, when our creation just started, everything was contained in a single entity. There was one simple cell, and that one simple cell had everything from hair to nails to liver to brain. It was all there. There's no later infusions. You don't add anything later on. Whatever the child that's conceived is the child that will be born, is the person that later has all of these different faculties. And as such, there is an element, a ikra v'sharsha, a root source of it all. And in the root source, it was all one. This is talked about in the language of Kabbalah of something called igulim. Igulim means circles. There's a circular reality. So there's linear reality. It's called Kav, and then it's called Kav and Yesher, and then it's called Igulim. So Kav and Yesher, which are linear, invariably are seen in vertical lines. And in a vertical line, so it's made up of dots. All the dots, all the nekudas, comprise the line, but there's a beginning of the line, an end of the line, and one is higher than the other, right? It's like there's a hierarchy where one gives to the other. But in a circle, there is no beginning and there is no end. There is no front and there is no back. There is no back of the bus. It's a circle. So in the circle, everybody can be the front, everybody can be the back. It's continuous. In other words, and from the circular reality, there is no greater prominence and no greater importance ascribed to one part of the circle over the other. As they say, that the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. The circle is only as strong as its weakest link. So if you have a circle, and the circle is very, very strong, made up of, but one part of the circle is a little bit weak, what's going to happen to that circle? It's going to break. Very simple. It's going to buckle. And then when it buckles, who buckled? The circle buckled. The whole circle.
There's still a notion of tachton and elyon.
On a certain level, there's a notion of tachton and elyon. That is correct. And on another level, on a higher level, there is no tachton and elyon. That's the difference between igulim and between Yesher. The difference between circular reality and the difference between the line. And this is what the Alter Rebbe says. He says, in order to fulfill this mitzvah of Ahavas Yisrael, for real, I have to be able to reach a level or an understanding or an appreciation that in fact, there is no such thing as a more important or less important member of Am Yisrael. There is no such thing on some level of somebody who is higher or lower, because higher and lower only exists within a certain frame of reality. That's once you come into a lower reality. But if you go back at Ikra Vesharsha, if you go back to the source of everything, none of that exists. All of that is gone. Because at the source of everything, if you trace it back to its origin, you're dealing with a circle. And when you're dealing with a circle, there is no beginning and there is no end. So what is the point being made? On one hand, we talked about Avas Yisrael. In order to love a fellow Yid, I have to get past the bodily reality and have to be able to catapult myself into the spiritual reality. I have to create dominance of spirit over matter and body, and then I won't look at a yid in a bodily way. I won't say, that guy smells, he's fat, he's skinny, he's dumb, he's smart, he's rich, he's poor. It doesn't matter, he's a neshama. And he says, neshama is a neshama. And it doesn't make a difference which kind of Jew he is. If he puts on tefillin, he puts on tefillin, it's a mitzvah. She lights Shabbos candles, it's Shabbos candles. What's the difference? I don't care who his grandfather is. I don't care who his grandmother is. I don't care how many years he was in the yeshiva. I do not care how many pages of Gemara he studied or how many billions are in his bank account. This is irrelevant. He's a yid. And from that perspective, we have to take the opportunity. If a yid needs something, a fellow you need something, ozav tazavim, he's faltering under a donkey. It doesn't matter who he is. The mitzvah of Avos Yisrael says it matters not who. What matters is it's family, and therefore when it comes to family, so why did you do that? It's my family. It's my brother and my sister. Which one? The sister you like or the sister you hate? What do you mean? If I did it because it's family, there is no sister I like or hate. There's no brother I like or hate. It's not relevant. I did it because it's family. Yeah, but you don't really get along. It's not relevant. Because this deed was not motivated by friendship. This deed was motivated ultimately by family. Blood's thicker than water. Okay, if blood's thicker than water, if it's family, then that's why I'm motivated to love my fellow yid. So contrary to Wonder Woman or some other foolish actors and actresses, you know, Israel's Hollywood, who want to lecture everybody and tell everybody, V'ahavtarach kamecha, sorry to inform you, V'ahavtarach kamecha is a mitzvah towards our fellow Jews. We should respect every single human being. Every human being is created in God's image, saving a life, saving the whole world. All of that is true. However, the ridiculous assumption that we have to love everybody like ourselves is exactly that, a ridiculous assumption. Even the fact that we have to love every yid as ourselves is something that boggled the brains of the greatest minds of the Jewish people. Rashi himself, as we learned last week, gave two interpretations other than what Hillel said. Why? Maharal says it's other than what Hillel said. Because what does it mean to love a fellow as yourself? All the commentaries discuss this. On Chumash, Ramban, there's all kinds of ideas. How is it possible? It's actually asking people for the impossible. And that's problematic. Because if Yiddishkeit asks for the impossible, then the whole thesis is fraught. If God's asking or expecting things of us that we can't do, what's the point? So those of you will say, I have a challenge I can't overcome. I could say to you, logically I could agree, emotionally I could empathize. Faith, from a faith-based position, I cannot accept that. It's impossible. Anybody should have a challenge they can't overcome. Maybe you need help from others. Maybe you need help from God. I don't know how. If you're able to get the help, you have to get the help. So it doesn't mean you could always, God expects you to do it yourself. But the circumstances can be dealt with. It's impossible that the circumstances that can't be dealt with. And I say that entirely from a faith-based perspective. I know it's a cliche. What you don't doesn't kill you. Will make you stronger. It's all cliches. Really, as Jewish people, we have to believe this. If the Torah is real, if Yiddishkeit is real, if God's real, if our relationship with God is real, then it has to be possible. If the Torah says, V'aftarach kamecha, it has to be possible. To actually think that V'aftarach kamecha means love every single person as yourself, first of all, it's just not true. It's not true. The people who say that don't do it, and they don't live by it. And the people who know that this is what it says in Torah struggle to understand what did Hashem ask of us. And Alter Rebbe is telling you, here's what Hashem is asking of you. He's asking of you that through Torah mitzvahs, through Yiddishkeit, you should be able to take your soul and you should be able to get past your bodily reality. Is it easy? No. It's a lifetime of effort. Maybe you'll experience it for a moment. There's a beautiful story told that the Rebbe's father became the chief rabbi of Yekaterinoslav, today called Dnepropetrovsk, very, very famous city. Catherine City. It was supposed to rival St. Petersburg. It's like, not the actual capital of Ukraine. Kiev was the capital of Ukraine, but the second most important city in Ukraine. And the position was given to a young chassid in his early 30s. So obviously not everybody was happy. There were plenty of people who were unhappy about this. And they try to, undermine him and so on and so forth. So the story goes that one year Simchas Torah, so he danced with a simple person. And then there was slander to the government, to the Tsar's government at the time, that the rabbi is demeaning the office of the rabbi because he danced with a simple shoemaker. It was like in the social isms of the turn of the last century, it was like this, classes, people who existed at a certain class, didn't interact, somebody who was beneath your dignity. And how could it be that the rabbi, who's supposed to be the upper cut, the upper crust of Russian society, and is dancing with a beggar, I don't know, a shoemaker? How could such a thing be? Right? It's a total misunderstanding of what Yiddishkeit is. And of course, it was Simchas Torah, and that's what happens in Simchas Torah. And in Simchas Torah, we make a point of dancing in a circle. Who's at the head of the circle? Nobody. That's the point. That is the essence of Simchas Torah.
So we've got Benoni, we've got Russia, we've got Tzaddik. Outside of the tzaddik, everybody else has got an ego always.
Yeah, so that's true. So we have to work. You're asking a very good question. Outside of the tzaddik, nobody's there. We're working.
There's got to be even the Benoni has a sign.
So we have to be working towards it. Even the in between or Benoni, who's an extraordinary level, who we work towards.
But they say you can't get. You know, it's impossible to be a tzaddik unless.
It is impossible to become a tzaddik unless you're destined to be a tzaddik and given the ability before. That's correct. If I start training for 18 hours a day, I'll still not become an Olympic anything. Maybe a chess player, but that's not my thing, right? So you have to have it as part of you. That's true. But the point the Alter Rebbe makes here is this is not a mitzvah for tzaddikim. It's a mitzvah for ordinary people. It is possible to get past your ego. It's possible.
Even as a benoni.
It doesn't mean a person lives weightlessly constantly, but just continuously striving for that. In every interaction, I can get past the material. A beggar comes over to me and he's harassing me, and my first impulse is, get away from me. I don't want to have anything to do with you. I'm not interested in helping you. And then my second impulse is, I have to help this person. I don't like this person. So what? I have to help this person. So.
But the I don't like is based on what?
Based on I. The I don't like is based on I. So if I can get past the I, if I go from uppercase I to lowercase I, and I can stop focusing on I, and remember that it's really about us and God, I can get past that. And here the Alter Rebbe says...
Because this person annoys you, or because...
There's endless amounts of equations as to why somebody might get under your nails. But they, you know, it could be endless reasons. Why it gets under your skin. The bottom line is that when there's a need for Avas Yisrael, then there's a need for Avas Yisrael, and it makes no difference. And the point that we're making here now, the Alter Rebbe says, is not only this, not only to get past the bodily reality, but to get to the point where even neshama levels don't matter. So when it comes to the neshama levels, say, who knows? Maybe this guy's a very high neshama. He's stuck in a very low place, but he has a high neshama. Somebody came to me yesterday at the Kiddush. She said, I want to ask you a question. I said, okay, go ahead. He says to me, is it true? Do you believe that God gives everybody the strength that they need to overcome their particular circumstances? I said, absolutely. So if somebody has a bigger or more trying challenge to be a good yid, do you believe that Hashem necessarily gives them greater abilities? I said, yes. We have to believe that. So he says, then it means you believe that somebody who's born in a secular family has a higher neshama than somebody born in an observant family. I said, that's logical. I said, I've always thought that, actually. That makes perfect sense. Why? Because it's harder to tear yourself away from what you're used to and to acclimatize yourself to a life of Torah mitzvahs. Einachanami? Yes. Yeah, the Baal Tshuva has to have more strength from a certain dimension, certainly. 100%. Mm-hmm. Why? Because Hashem wouldn't ask of him what he can't do. So you look at this person and you say, I should love this person. You got to be kidding. Look what they are coming from. Look what they do. Look what I do. I can't love this person. Now, that I've said to you in the previous classes, you said, you know, v'nefesh v'ruach miyedei gdulas namalasan. Who knows the value of that soul? You think your soul's so great? Maybe his soul's bigger. Yeah, but I learned Torah and I did mitzvahs and I did, and this person's selfish and mean. Maybe it could be true, but it doesn't mean that in the source, maybe this neshama is not higher. That was up until today. Today, the Alter Rebbe is telling us, not only do I have to get the neshama and elevate it over the body, but furthermore, I have to take the neshama beyond just the limitation of the body or bodily reality that inhibits, and I have to take it mila, higher and yet higher. How high? How high? Ad ikra v'sharsha. Until the very origin of everything, going back to the first moment of conception, so to speak, when everything was in a singular cell, going back to the reality of igulim, that's what we're talking about. And it's very intense. And why is this? Why is that the essence of Yiddishkeit? So the Alter Rebbe says, "V'gam laham shacher and save baruch hu b'knesset Yisrael." This is in order then to bring, so to speak, light, divine light and energy into Knesset Yisrael. Knesset Yisrael is this proverbial gathering of neshamas on high that represents the source of all souls of Israel. As the Alter Rebbe is going to say later on in chapter 37 and onward, the Hainu b'makor neshamas kol Yisrael, to the source of all the souls of Israel. All right. In order to understand what we're about to say now, let me just share with you a little story, and then we're going to go on to this next point. The story is told that the Maggid of Mizrich was very, very poor, to the point that literally his children were starving. And at one point, the Rebbetzin came to him and she said to him, the children are starving. Look. And he was involved in a spiritual pursuit. He's like, the children are starving. So the story goes that he shed a tear. Shed a tear. And there was a whole tumult in heaven. Did he shed a tear because it was a Yiddish kind? Or did he shed a tear because it was his child? Could you imagine? Can you imagine that being an issue? But when you're in the Maggid of Mizritch, that's an issue. And there's a similar story told about one of the Polish Rebbes who came home after, I think it was a baby, Emily Melech of Lizhansk, that he came home after weeks of wandering, disguised as a simple person, in order to feel the pain and suffering of exile and dispersion, in order to feel Golos Hashkina. So now Vayda for Tzaddikim. Every summer he would go incognito, and he would live in very austere circumstances, with anonymity, nobody knew who he was, and he'd be mistreated by people. And this is, he's trying to elevate a soul, and do this on an annual basis. Wow. And one year he came home, and somebody told him, your son, Moshe, is sick, whatever the name was. And he became terribly distraught, and he ran to the house, and he found out, he saw his wife there, she said, Moshe, no, it's not our Moshe. It's the Moshe down the block. And he felt a sense of relief. Oh, Baruch Hashem, it's not our Moshe. And then he felt terribly distraught. He says, what was the point of my whole wandering? What was the point if somebody else's Moshe? Oh, somebody else's? Ah, that's fine. Now, you look at the story and you say, like, hello. He's a normal father. Like, who would not care about his own child more than somebody else's child? Only somebody who's seriously not normal or a tzaddik. So that's not going to be asked of any of us. It will not be expected of us to care about somebody else's child more than our own child. But what is expected of us is to try to aspire to this and be inspired by it. The Friedrich Rebbe tells a story in one of his sikhs of a tzaddik who was taken to task for exactly this, because he didn't cry for the suffering of another child like he cried. He cried harder for the suffering of his own child. And that was considered inappropriate. So why should the tzaddik take care of his own children first? Because the tzaddik knows the Torah says, "Mibesor chal tesalem." It's a Torah responsibility to take care of your own children for somebody else's child. Not because he actually feels or one child is more important than the other. Now, that's easy to talk about. For us, virtually impossible. There's a glass ceiling that will never break. That's an avodah of tzaddikim. On some level, we have to aspire to the concept of Avas Yisrael, where I take care of a person not because he's my fellow chassid, not because we share the same ideas or ideals, not because we're part of the same community, not because we believe in the same politics, not because we think in a kindred fashion, but because
Tzayid.
That's what we have to work on. Very difficult. But that's the mitzvah of Yahafta de Achamech.
Is this the 49 levels?
Why are you so sure it's only 49 levels?
In Egypt they were...
You mean going from Mitzrayim to be able to receive the Torah?
Yeah.
If it makes you feel better to put it into 49 levels, 49 levels represents the extent of our human endeavor. So yes, this you have to marshal every ounce of wherewithal and ability, and that's all you could be asked of you, if you want to put it that way, is 49 levels, yeah. So, but now, obviously, Saul takes on a different and even more profound essence. And that is that life, from a Torah perspective, is laham shecher in seif, is to bring godliness, to bring light into the world. So what does this mean, to bring light into the world? Do we not have light in the world? What do you mean? Is God not part of this world? What does it mean to bring light? What does it mean to bring God into the world? So those of you who have studied a little Chassidus are very familiar with the terminology of Oyd HaSoiviv and Oyd HaMemala, the light that fills, the light that encompasses. Obviously, it's metaphoric terminology. The simplest way, perhaps, we could explain this is by looking at the human being itself. The human being is powered by the soul. When the soul and the body, Chas V'Shalom, are not together, once they're separate, you have a corpse and you have a ghost. You don't have life anymore. You don't have, so to speak, life as we know it. So life as we know it requires that the soul and the body be bound together. Okay. The way the neshama impacts a body is on two levels. Every body has many faculties. Faculties that are needed for life. Some are more critical, some are less critical. Seeing is not a critical part of life. You could live without the gift of sight. You could live without the gift of coordination. You can live without the gift of hearing. You can live without the gift of speaking. They're all very important parts of life. The Gemara says that Suma Chashav Kemes, a person who can't see, it's like a person who's dead. Not very inspiring if, God forbid, somebody's blind. But the point is, you can live without these things. Without a heart that's pumping, you can't live. Without a liver cleaning the blood, you can't live. Today we have an artificial way of doing it, which can extend life, but eventually life can't continue. At present, at least, the technology just doesn't keep up with what a liver does. You can live without digestion. There are people who live without digestion for many, many years. They actually put nutrients directly into the bloodstream. You all understand that a life without these faculties is a life compromised, a life that is not lived to its fullest. To live life to its fullest, we need to be in perfect health. To be in perfect health, we need to have all of our faculties working, everything, from our ears to our eyes, mm-hmm. from our intestines to our toes, everything working, have coordination. Mm-hmm. Person is, chas v'shalom, disabled, handicapped, stuck in a wheelchair. There's a certain mobility is not the same. He has mobility, but not the same mobility. He's compromised. We are taught that the neshama has the ability to power one faculty or another faculty with different soul powers. That is to say that there is a parallel between the actual physical eye and between the koyach ha-ra'iyah, the ability to see. There's a parallel between the two. In other words, there's a certain part of neshama that's mitlabesh, that necessarily animates and activates the physical eye. Now, what happens if, God forbid, the physical eye is injured or compromised? So the mechanism is incomplete, then the soul will not be able to make it work. So, for example, if you want to plug in the toaster, but the toaster's wires are disconnected, it could be a fine plug, and there could be plenty of electricity, that toaster's not going to work. Why? Because the mechanism, the machine, is broken. And so it is. This is an imperfect metaphor, by the way, because all electricity is the same, whereas here we're saying that there is a specific, you know, as if there was a part of electricity that powers toasters, a part of electricity that powers iPhones, a part of electricity that powers radios, and so on and so forth, which is not the case. Of course, electricity is electricity. But the neshama has specific faculties. So what happens when a person, Rahman al-Utslan, loses ability to see? What happens to that part of the neshama? The answer is it's not animated, it's not activated. To some level, it gets shifted elsewhere, it gets diverted elsewhere. And so people who can't see can usually hear better, or they have other faculties that are sharpened. But on some level, that part of the neshama goes dark, it's dormant, it's not being used. Why? Because it doesn't have the ability for it to be used. And
so meaning that we can relate the senses to the neshama?
There are senses in the neshama. Now, the neshama is not merely a conglomerate of different faculties. The neshama contains these faculties. The neshama is more than the sum of its parts. But the neshama has within it, it contains within it parts.
So we can say the same about the organs.
What do you mean you could say the same about the organs?
You know, like internal organs, the limbs.
100%, all the organs. Every organ has its own faculty, has its own purpose, what it does, and it's all powered by a different part of the neshama. Absolutely. Koyach ha-ra'iyah, koyach ha-shmiyah, koyach ha-ikul, the power of seeing, the power of hearing, the power of digestion. Absolutely. 100%. And then there's the part of the neshama that just gives life to the whole body. The whole body. So if somebody were to ask, which part of you is more alive? Your eyes, your nose, or your toes? Which part of you is more alive? So I don't understand the question. What do you mean, which part is more alive? You can't be more alive or less alive. You're either alive or not. What happens if you leave human remains just... any part of human remains. Just leave it. Just leave it outside. What will happen within a very short amount of time?
Decompose.
Not only will decompose, little animals will come. What happens if you leave a corpse unattended? It could be the most fearsome corpse. It could be the biggest wrestler. It could be a person armed to the teeth. What will happen in a very short amount of time?
Food for the worms.
Food for the worms. The maggots will come. When a person is alive and sleeping, the maggots eat him? No. Why? Because there's a certain fear they have of life itself. It could be a baby, small little baby. The rats don't come out to chew on his toes. The moment it's dead, the animals sense that. They know it's dead meat. In other words, when a person's alive, all of him is alive. No part of him is more or less alive. It's not like they chew toes but don't chew brains.
It's freaky.
It's freaky, but it's a fact. Think about it. The whole body's alive. Furthermore, when a person desires something, which part of him desires? If a person is very hungry, hasn't eaten all day, and he walks into some place where there's delicious food that's cooking, and the smell is enough to drive anybody crazy. And what does he want? What does he want at that moment? He's starving, hasn't eaten all day. There's this delicious dish being cooked. What is? He just wants to eat. He wants anything. Doesn't matter. He just wants to eat. He wants to eat. He wants to eat. That's what he wants. Now, let me ask you a simple question. Which part of him wants to eat? Does his stomach want to eat? Does his nose want to eat? Does his mouth? No, he wants to eat. She wants to eat. He or she will eat with their mouth, hopefully not their ear. He or she will eat with their stomach, not their eyes. But he or she wants to eat. All of he or she wants to eat. You understand?
Yeah, but it's a biological kind of...
This is a metaphor, my friend. Yes, it's a biological reality. Biologically speaking, the food will be chewed by the teeth. It will be downed by the esophagus. Yeah. It will be digested by the stomach, the large stomach, and the small intestines. That's the biology. Right. I'm not interested in biology right now.
It also feeds the whole body.
The food will feed the whole body. That is correct. And after a person eats, what feels better? He says, my stomach feels good now. I was starving. My stomach was, now I'm happy. Now my stomach feels better. Really? What would a person say? My stomach feels better? I feel better. Which part of you feels better? Do your toes feel better? Does the tip of your ear feel better? What kind of stupidity is this? I feel better. All of me feels better. So there's a part of life which is not specific. A person could say, my eyes are hurting me. Or a person could say, I saw things that have impacted, or a flash of light stopped me from seeing. This is not from hearing. I could hear everything, but I couldn't see for a moment. But then there could be an event that happens which takes a person and impacts the person comprehensively. So what I described to you is koyach haratzon, the desire to want something very badly, and the koyach hatainug, the power of pleasure. Both are overarching. Both are all-encompassing. That's called oyr hasoiviv. In the metaphor, that's called the encompassing light. The oyr hasoiviv, the encompassing light, is something that encompasses everything in totality, in an atmospheric way. So when God created the world, there is the atmospheric reality of divinity. Where is the atmospheric reality of divinity? Is God more in the heavens than on earth? How could that be? God is everywhere. There can't be a place where there isn't God. All of existence is within God. Having said that, however, we say that there's a difference between the proverbial heaven and earth. Like the Friedrich Rebbe says, the famous pasuk, it says that when it comes to Shomayim, it says, Yamini Tapcha Shomayim. It speaks proverbially, anthropomorphologically, about God's right hand creating the heavens. In other words, greater emphasis, greater strength, greater ability, if you will. In other words, there are many levels of divinity where you see a person can see more life and less life, a person can see vital organs and less vital organs. So there is parts of the body which are more important and less important, and then there is the all-encompassing concept. This is all metaphoric for the idea of Oyr HaMemala and Oyr HaSeiviv, the light that encompasses, the light that fills. And here, my dear friends, is the point. This world, by definition, must have godliness in it, so to speak. All of it's powered by God. There is no part of the world which is disconnected from God, where God isn't, because if God isn't, then it weren't. If he doesn't exist, nothing exists. Everything exists because of God. Having said that, in an Oyr HaMemala fashion, there's different levels of God's presence being felt or known. In the Beis HaMikdash, God's presence is known more profoundly. In an ordinary place, God's presence is felt or seen less profoundly. You can see a greater sign of life. You want to know who a person is, look at his face. How about look at his elbow? I know everything about this person. Really? How do you know? I just looked at his elbow. It told me everything. That's baloney, his kneecap. His kneecap doesn't tell you anything. But his face does, especially the eyes. When they release these pictures of, you know, people in the Secret Service, what do they always block out? The eyes. Because the eyes are the most powerful way to identify a person. And the eyes are called the windows to the soul. So there's a different parts of the body, the part of the body that's more expressive, that speaks neshama. Chachmas oy adam toyer panav, the wisdom of a person illuminates the face. The eyes express the neshama itself. There are wise eyes, foolish eyes, mean eyes, capricious eyes, greedy eyes. And all the emoticons even have like different eyes. So when God created the world, he created the world in a way where there's many different levels. Many different levels. So what happens when you do a mitzvah? If God is everywhere, what do you mean we're going to bring God into this world through a mitzvah? What does that mean? If you tell me you bring God into this world by talking about God, so now God is part of the world's consciousness, okay, I understand that. That's what Avraham Avinu did. He talked about God. People knew about God before they didn't know about it, and then they did know about it. But what about mitzvahs? So every mitzvah is a vehicle. It's through which godliness is transported into this world. It's an operating system. You know, if you get a PDF but you don't have Adobe software, you can't open the PDF. You need the right software to open it up. So the mitzvah is the software that enables you to open up the program and download it into this world. What level of divinity does the world not have in an overt way? The atmospheric level. What's called the Ratzon and the Tainuk. That's the will, the metaphor of will, the metaphor of pleasure, that doesn't have. So we say when Mashiach will come, it will be a Dira Le'Yisbarech, a dwelling for God, B'tachtenim, in the lower world. For which part of God? All of God. When you're home, you're home. You kick back. You're yourself. Nobody knows you as well as the people live in the house together with you.
But in fact, Dira Tachtonim, it's just more revelation, less Tzimtzum.
Well, more revelation, you're right. Dira B'tachtenim means more, God's seen in a more revelatory way and there's less concealment. The point is that through mitzvahs, we bring the Eir in Seif. We bring the atmospheric light of God into this world.
Right.
Understand? So the world is given exactly the amount of godliness that it needs to function. Your eyes have exactly what it needs to see. Your ears have exactly what it needs to hear, etc. When we bring godliness into the world, we're bringing a level of divinity that the world doesn't need to exist. This goes back to the famous notion of Maslow, who talks about the hierarchy of needs. And he looked at a person entirely through the prism of biology. There are things which I need more and things which I need less. If somebody say to you, what do you need more? Do you need more meaning in life or do you need more food? What would they tell you? Food. Do you need more shelter or do you need more spirituality? So what are you, crazy or something? It's 50 below outside. I need shelter. But Viktor Frankl came along and said he had it all wrong. Maslow just looked at everything in a chemical way. He talked about biology. But a human being is not a piece of biology. A human being ultimately is a neshama. And therefore he said, in the camps I saw people who had no food and no shelter and stayed alive. And people who had perhaps dropped more food and a little more shelter and they died. What was the difference between the two? One had meaning and one didn't. So in the end, meaning is more powerful. So this is the idea of a mitzvah. We say, what does the world have? The world has what it needs to exist. But the question is, can you give meaning to the world? Mitzvahs are bringing meaning to the world. And meaning is actually more important even than existence, because meaning is what allows for existence. And therefore, the mitzvah is the vehicle through which we're able to bring Eir in Seif, the infinite light of God, the atmospheric light, the Eir HaSoiviv, into this world. Here now is what you need to know. There is, on the way of your power coming to your own outlet, at first the power station has to go to a box. Every neighborhood has one. Every street has multiple ones. And the box is where all the power comes in, and from there it gets distributed. Where does this power, how does this power come into the world? How does this divinity come into the world? What's the power station? What's, so to speak, the power box? The answer is Neshamas Yisrael, Knesset Yisrael. In other words, through the Jewish people, that's how this light happens. That's the meaning to be a chosen people. Not smarter, we're not prettier, we're not richer, we're not more successful, necessarily. What are we? We're the vehicle through which God brings holiness into this world. God said, I placed you as a beacon for all nations. Through us comes the profusion of divinity to the whole world. That's what we believe. It has nothing to do with race, it has nothing to do with creed, it has nothing to do with color, it has nothing to do with affiliation. It has to do with an essential spiritual reality. And the point then is that when can it function like that? It can function like that is lemehevi echad bi echad dafke, in order for us to be able to serve as that vehicle, as that convention, as that envelope that brings godliness into the world, we need to be whole. A broken machine doesn't work. If the machine is broken, it's not going to be able to process the energy. Not when there is a distinction amongst neshamas, differences amongst neshamas. In other words, that the essence of Yiddishkeit requires us to get past our differences. It requires us to get into the circular and atmospheric reality, because if we don't get into the circular atmospheric reality, we disable the very functionality of the proverbial Jewish people. Our nation can function. Our nation's function is to serve as a segue for divinity into this world. But if we're busy fighting, instead of being an Erle Goyen Nesaticha, the machine breaks down. Doesn't work. The mechanism is broken. The kutcher brichu l'shaya besar pigim, because godliness can't come into a broken vehicle. Frankly, coffee doesn't go into a cup of holes either. And godliness for sure doesn't work like that. And because godliness doesn't work like a mesher kosov, like it says, Barcheinu avinu kulanu ke'echad, God blesses us. When does God bless us? Kulanu ke'echad, we're all one. It's not like as if God says, you know, be nice, be one, then I'll decide to bless you. This is the chemical reality of the spirit. That when could the blessing come? When we create wholesomeness. That wholesomeness becomes a vehicle for God's blessing. So therefore, Hillel said, this is actually the whole Torah. The whole Torah is about bringing godliness into this world. And the only way to bring godliness into this world is if we have Yahavta Yachamecha. Now, of course, you may be thinking to yourself, okay, this is like, we may as well give up because it's never going to happen. Right? So it's a sobering thought, but clearly it has to be able to happen on some level. Everything, every truth is true also in a microcosmic level as well. And so the more unity we create, the more blessing. If a machine is working, part of it's working, at least part of it's working. The more of this we have, the greater will be a segue for that blessing. So the more unity we're able to create, the more divisiveness we're able to overcome, the more division we're able to transcend, the better we work, better we function as a Jewish nation, the more our mitzvahs are effective. And that's the meaning. It's all about love. Now, next week we'll talk about, so what about the sinners? What about the bad people? How do we love them? I mean, it's very nice. I understand the theory, but practically speaking, aren't there some people we're supposed to detest and despise? So we'll be troubleshooting and figuring out how to deal with that. Bezrat Hashem next week.